They want to open mailboxes and steal mail, and all they want out of that mail is the checks. The checks businesses are sending out to vendors or whoever they need to pay, or checks they're receiving from other people. And then they travel with the necessary equipment to counterfeit those checks, which doesn't take much.
Introducing The Protectors, inside criminal minds from around the world. Presented by the IAFCI, leaders in safeguarding consumers from fraud and scams for more than 50 years. And now your hosts, International President Mark Solomon and Chairman of the Board Michael Carroll.
Hello, everybody. This is Mike Carroll, International Chairman of the International Association of Financial Crimes Investigators. I am with Mark Solomon, our International President. Mark, how are you doing today?
Mr. Mike, I am doing awesome. You know why? Because I'm really excited about the podcast. It is growing. We got people signing up with this podcast left and right, listening to all the messages that were given to our subject matter experts. And, you know, we're making a difference. And that's what's the most important thing. We're reaching out to people, educating them. And we're also getting people that are victims of crime to come forward. Maybe they felt embarrassed or ashamed, or maybe didn't even realize they were being defrauded while they're coming forward, and that's what it's all about.
And Mark, that's one of our goals with the International Association of Financial Crimes Investigators, to provide training and education not only to our members but to the public, and the podcast is one way that we're doing that. So it's been really growing lately, and we're glad to see that.
Yeah, and we got to give a shout out, as always, to Modified Media for doing just an incredible production of this podcast. They're with us day and night, working hard. So we thank Mr. Doug Taylor and the team. So, hey, Mike, I'm actually also excited for another reason, because today's episode of The Protectors is brought to you by a very special sponsor, LifeVibe.biz, a champion of the Made in America movement. LifeVibe.biz stands out as a beacon of hope in today's fast-paced world, dedicated to protecting your family from harmful chemicals and ensuring wellness on a budget.
Hey, Mark, you're right. I went on their website, and it's not just about selling products. They're about creating a safer environment for you and your family.
Absolutely. So to our listeners, so why not start making a positive impact on your health and wallet today? Visit lifevibe.biz to embrace your wellness journey with products made for a little guy, the American family. Lifevibe.biz, where your health, environment, and wealth are always the top priority. And Mike, I'll tell you what, I think it's now time to introduce our subject matter expert. So our next guest served 22 years with the Lexington Division of Police in Lexington, Kentucky. In his tenure at the police department, he served numerous assignments to include detective and sergeant of the Narcotics Enforcement Unit, Intelligence and Organized Crime Unit, FBI Criminal Enterprise Task Force, FBI Joint Terrorism Task Force, DEA Task Force, U.S. Marshals Fugitive Task Force, and served as the Assistant Commander of the Emergency Response Unit, or what we call SWAT. He retired from law enforcement after a distinguished career and entered the banking private sector. He is currently a Senior Vice President, Director of Financial Intelligence and Security Unit at Central Bank and Trust Company, which is headquartered in Lexington, Kentucky. He is one of the most foreknown experts in Operation Homeless Bank fraud schemes and educates both law enforcement and financial investigators. Mike and I would like to welcome to the show, from the great state of Kentucky, Shane Ensminger.
Thank you, Mike and Mark, for having me. And I am sitting in my bank office looking at Rupp Arena, home of the Kentucky Wildcats, with basketball season Final Four play starting. I've got a good seat. I get to be right next door to what I hope is the next championship team.
Nice, nice. We're excited here in Illinois. We got University of Illinois plus Northwestern that are going to be in the NCAA tournament. So we're excited here, too.
Well, just remember who won last year and is one of the favorites is good old UConn, my favorite state in Connecticut. So by the time this airs, we'll find out who the new NCAA champion is. So
hopefully it's won it.
That's right.
Hey, Shane, thank you for coming on. You know, we want to talk to you especially about how you developed the Operation Homeless Fraud Prevention Program. But I just wanted to go back. I'm always interested in your career as a police officer and being in law enforcement. What made you get into that profession?
You know, I was drawn to it as a kid. Maybe I watched too much Starsky and Hutch and The Rookies and Adam 12, but whatever reason, I was drawn to it and knew that's what I was going to do when I grew up. So
nice.
As soon as I became of age, I started taking the test and practicing to get hired.
And Shane, looking at your resume, holy cow, I mean, did you work 20 hours a day? Because I've never seen somebody that was a part of so many task forces and units. I mean, what a distinguished career you had, I'll tell you.
Yeah, and when you enjoy the work, you don't even know you're working that much. But yeah, when I started in the early 90s, you worked a lot because you had to, because the pay wasn't equivalent. So you had to live on that overtime.
Yep.
Yes, I enjoyed it.
Well, Shane, after you retired, you got into banking. I was going to ask you, did your police experience help you prepare for getting into the private sector as far as a bank investigator?
It did. It helped a lot. And I was lucky enough to where I was able to start the organized crime unit for the Lexington Police, which we took our special investigation section and just picked our best investigators throughout the entire agency. I stole the best homicide detective, the best burglary detective, the best financial crimes, vice, and narcotics detectives. So we could create a unit that was going to do something that had never been done, which was go after organized crime on a regional scale. And to do that, you had to build relationships with every agency from federal, local, state, county, it didn't matter. So we built relationships, and then we brought in the banks. And that's what kind of got me interested in the financial stuff, because I didn't just see the bank anymore, somebody I served a warrant or a subpoena on to get assets, but a partner we could work with, doing it through the right channels. So we worked with banks for years, and I got to know a lot of BSA officers and investigators within the banking community. So as my career started wrapping up, I had over 20 years in and could retire, and found out there was a job opening at Central Bank in Lexington, and I had a familial tie with it because my father had been retired for quite a while, but he'd spent almost 40 years at the same bank, Central Bank. So I joked with him, I may put in for a job at your bank. And he said, oh, don't ruin my legacy. And I said, I won't.
So
I won't ruin your legacy.
Shane, I want to bring out, you know, something really our listeners, I think it's important to hear, is how law enforcement has sort of developed and changed over the years. You know, that communication, that working together, collaboration, it is so fundamental when it comes to these type of crimes, whether it's financial, narcotics, terrorism. And, you know, I spent 26 years in it. And Mike, how many? 150, I think, with postal.
Oh, here we go.
I'm sorry, but... you know, it is a new day and age where, you know, over the last 10, 20, 30 years, there would be agencies working cases and the agency right next door or an hour away was working the same suspect or fraud and they didn't know it. And, you know, yeah. It's so important that we have that communication, like you said, with law enforcement and the private sector.
It is. And you hit the nail on the head. And for my career, it was 9/11 that kind of mandated the change across law enforcement nationally, federally,
yeah.
Locally.
Yeah.
You had to get those fusion centers up and running, information sharing centers. So that changed the game. And that's what led us to create redevelop our intel unit into an organized crime and intelligence unit, because we wanted everybody on the same page. That's why we had every federal agency and all local and surrounding agencies all meeting once a month, even with bank investigators involved in this, on who were the criminals, who were the people hurting the community. And law enforcement has improved greatly with that. And now that's some of the stuff we brought to banking is, you know, let's get out of this silo of what this bank does versus what that credit union does, not talking to each other. Now we're very good regionally at really talking and discussing stuff with each other and helping each other.
I always say there's no competition when it comes to fraud and crimes, right? We all work together, so.
Exactly. We compete loans and deposits, but we don't compete when it comes to fraud.
Hey, Shane, I like what you're saying about partnership, and that's why Mark and I have a passion for the IFCI. We're both longtime members. We have about 7,500 and growing members, and it's about sharing information. It's like having, we always say, it's like having 7,500 members of law enforcement and financial crime investigators at your side, but you are right. It's all about partnership, working together, sharing information. We have a lot of tools out there, a lot of working groups where we share information and how important it is.
Yes, I agree.
So, Shane, you know, the reason we wanted to come on the show, because you are known nationwide for the work you've done on Operation Homeless Crimes and Investigation. So for our listeners, I know that terminology, like, you know, throughout my entire career, but there's probably a lot of people out there in public have never heard of it. So can you explain to our listeners what Operation Homeless Schemes are?
I can, and I also want to say that not just our public, I've learned there's a lot of banks that don't know what it is, and there's even more law enforcement that doesn't know what it is.
That's true.
Matter of fact, outside of your financial crimes units of your local law enforcement agencies, your average patrol officer or narc detective or anybody else, they don't know what it is, no clue. But what it basically is a lot of times it's just street gangs. In my region of the country, it's headquartered in Atlanta, so I'm in central Kentucky. But our group always comes up out of Atlanta. And what they do is they travel up and down the interstate. They visit business parks, office parks, anything congested with businesses that have mailboxes out front, or in this day and age with everybody having an arrow key in their pocket that opens our U.S. postal boxes, they can hit those. But they want to open mailboxes and steal mail, and all they want out of that mail is the checks. The checks businesses are sending out to vendors or whoever they need to pay, or checks they're receiving from other people. And then they travel with the necessary equipment to counterfeit those checks, which doesn't take much, check stock and a printer. But then they've got to find somebody to cash that check, because everybody knows, whether you work at a bank or you bank at a bank, you know that there's very few businesses that have the camera systems that banks have. And the banks have a lot of cameras. They have them outside, they have them inside. So if you're going to commit a crime on bank property, you know you're going to be on video. And these kids are streetwise. They're not going to steal checks, write them to themselves, and walk past 27 cameras to get to the teller line.
I always said that, you know what, there's two places you don't commit a crime. One is at the bank, and two is at the casino, because there's so many darn cameras.
And the inside secret is the casinos are much better at videoing and catching surveillance than banks are, really. But I think they have a lot more money than banks.
Yeah, that's true.
But the criminals, they don't want to be on camera, and you have to show an ID. And they definitely don't want to show an ID. That's just the ticket to jail for them. So the low-hanging fruit, the easiest mule you can find is the homeless population, because you're not just going to pull up downtown of Lexington or Louisville or wherever you may be and just start asking random people, hey, you want to go cash checks? You've got to find the right person that has the incentive to want to go do it. And you've got a captive audience at homeless shelters, at intersections where panhandling is allowed or unenforced, or lunch locations, day centers, wherever. It's not hard to find, and it's mostly in downtown areas. I don't know if y'all can verify where you live, but your homeless shelters are probably close to downtown, and most are. So all they got to do is find the homeless shelter and then pull up. And a lot of times they'll lie. They'll say, hey, we're with a payroll company, or they'll give some front story, or we're with a secret shopper and we need to cash checks, and we'll hire you to go cash checks and fill out a customer service survey when you're done, and we'll give you $100 per check you cash. And you just bring the cash back to us, and then we'll take care of it from there, and you get an easy paycheck. And then sometimes they just flat out say, you want to go cash some counterfeit checks? I'll give you $150. I'll give you some heroin or some meth or some crack, whatever you want, some beer. You know, they know their audience and who they're talking to. So all they want is somebody with an ID, a valid state-issued ID. That's going to be their mule or their walker that can enter the bank, cash the check. That way, these people don't know them. They don't know where they're from. They're in a rental car that has a stolen plate on it, so it can't be traced back to them or where they rented it. So then they just drive around with those stolen checks they've counterfeited, hand them to the homeless guy that they're going to feed and dress well, and send them into the banks and cash the checks. And in my region, we were seeing on average about $1,500, but we've seen it move up to $7,000 to $14,000 range here in the last couple of years for the amount of value on the checks. So they're making good money, and they're hitting every bank in a region, and they're hitting quick, and they're gone. And a lot of times they just drop the homeless off wherever. they're expendable. They're never going to need them again, unless they need to travel with them. If they trust them enough to travel with them, they might get them a hotel room and spend a week or two with them going up and down I-75 or to the next state.
Yeah, Shane, that's this homeless fraud scam is big up in the Chicago area, too. And I remember, you know, I was with the U.S. Postal Inspection Service for a long time, 29 years, and then I'm back helping out now as an analyst. And it's still a problem. I know the U.S. Postal Inspection Service, and I remember them starting fraudsters are operating out of Atlanta. I know they were investigating them back then. I'm sure they're still investigating this homeless crew, not only in the Chicago area, but across the country.
Yes, they are.
But I was going to ask you, this scam, you see that the checks that are stolen, you know, sometimes they're stolen out of the mail, but they're made payable to the homeless person who has an ID. So they're basically going into the bank that the check is drawn on. Is that correct? So if they steal a check drawn on Chase, they're going to go into Chase. Chase going to check the ID, and they're going to make sure there's enough funds in the account. They're going to cash the check.
Exactly.
Is that basically how that part of the scam works?
Yes. It has to be the bank is drawn on because they're a non-customer. The person cashing the check's a non-customer.
Right. And sometimes, right, if they don't have an ID, these fraudsters, the ringleaders, the recruiters, might even drive them to the Department of Motor Vehicles to get an ID. I've heard about that in the past, too.
That's very common. They will drive them to the local DMV and just wait it out, wait in lines. You know, that's not a easy task sometimes, but they'll wait for it because it's worth the money.
And even take them to Walmart or another store to buy clothes, make them look halfway decent if they don't have the proper clothes to go into a financial institution.
Yeah, and a lot of times what you'll see is if they need an outfit to match maybe who the check's drawn against. So if it's drawn against a construction company, and they'll have a lot of this stuff in the trunk of the rental car. They'll have construction vests, hard hats, work boots. Because if you steal a construction company's check, you want your guy to look like he's doing construction for a living, like he's getting a paycheck. They steal from a law firm or from a business or something that looks a little more white collar. We've seen them pull into Macy's and buy suits and ties and sit there in the car and put hair product in, try to clean them up a little bit. So they'll spend some money on these guys.
So, Shane, you're saying that Mike would be a good candidate to be recruited for, like, a nursing home, right, if they had a check from there? Or...
Yes.
Well, all right. Sorry Real about funny. That, Mike. All right. Hey, Shane, you know, you brought up something early I want to go back to, and you said that the majority of what you're seeing in your area is gangs. And, you know, we've had speaker after speaker after speaker come on this show and tell us how gangs are so involved in financial crimes, cyber crimes. Why do you think that is?
It's safer. You're in a gang, you're already in the line of fire because you got other gangs that you may be warned with. But if you were standing on the street 10 years ago selling crack cocaine and then Oxycontin and then heroin and now fentanyl, you're in the line of fire there as well. You got law enforcement everywhere because in open drug markets, you've got rival gangs, rival drug dealers, law enforcement, all causing you to lose sleep and keep looking over your shoulder. No one's looking for white collar crime with gangbangers.
Yeah.
And it's easy. And, you know, drugs have minimum mandatory for most states and the federal government. Guns have minimum mandatories for how much time you're going to serve. White collar crime, check cashing, you're not going to serve much time. You're going to get slapped on the wrist, probated at worst, usually. So it's much less risk and a whole lot safer.
Yes, Shane, you mentioned that gangs getting involved and less of a risk for them. You know, I remember about 10 years ago interviewing a recruiter, and he had a bunch of debit cards on him, and I'm asking him, you know, what are you doing? He says, well, people give me their debit card and PIN number, and I put a check in their account. He says it's a lot safer for them than stealing a check and then making it payable to a fraudulent name or a victim name and getting an ID to match. Now they're looking at identity theft. And the recruiter's like, why should I do that when I could get somebody else to do the work for me, like you mentioned earlier?
Yeah, they're streetwise.
Yeah, and Shane, you know, the other thing, too, is I don't know how it is in Kentucky. And like I said, there is a trend in a lot of the states to sort of decriminalize some of these offenses, lessen the sentences. And it must be frustrating for you being in law enforcement for so many years and then also now in the banking industry that, you know, these investigations take time to work, effort, and there's real victims. I mean, you could argue that the homeless people that don't know this is a scam are victims as well. They're being targeted. But, you know, everybody thinks the banks have some sort of insurance policy for fraud, you know,
right.
And the bottom line is, you know, we're losing the money, you know, 9 times out of 10. So, and there's no insurance policy to get the money back.
And our businesses are losing, they're losing their checking account. They got to reopen. They got to start over again with a whole new checking account. They got to reset up all their vendor payments. It's a pain to your business. It's a financial burden to the bank and the customer. And the only person that gets in trouble is the homeless. He's the only one that can ever get arrested because the other guys are the bad guys. They've left the area. And the person that gave his ID and got caught on video 2 or 3 days earlier is the homeless guy who can easily be located standing on the intersection or at the shelter at night. So those guys go to jail and serve nobody any purpose being in jail.
Right.
Hey, Shane, one of the things we're seeing up here, a little uptick in bank fraud, I don't know if you're seeing it in Kentucky, is not only are they going in cash and checks, but they're just going into the financial institution or being recruited various ways. Some are recruited on gambling casinos, but they're going into the bank with fraudulent ID and knowing the PII and the account information, they're just doing a simple withdrawal, cash withdrawal. And
yes,
we're seeing an uptick in that here in Chicago area.
That's picking up. And we're seeing that and also recruiting the homeless or the down and out to open up new accounts just so they could do some funneling through that account.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of mule activity just to funnel stolen funds or victims' funds to one bank to the next and play that shell game. And for you know, as in law enforcement and the banking industry, you know, we can't just snap our fingers and get that bank information. You know, you got to file for a subpoena or a search warrant. So the fraudsters know to, you know, move the money around quickly, and it gets very frustrating to investigate.
Hey, Shane, have you ever heard of any instance of these individuals getting hurt for, you know, going into the bank, taking out money and not telling their ringleader or recruiter that they actually got money? Is there anything like that? I've heard that in the past where some got hurt based on, you know, trying to hide the funds that they got at the counter. And when they came outside, they, oh, no, it didn't go through. And then they search them and they found them and then they assault them or whatever.
And I'll tell you how I've heard it. But first, I'll also tell you, they never travel in one car. The person carrying the mule around in the backseat of the car, there's always two people in that car, and they'll drop that person off and make them walk several blocks to the bank. But around here, there's always another rental car with two more people in it with binoculars, and they're looking in the bank to see if their guy's doing good or not. And they're also having them wear an earpiece or keep their cell phone turned on so they can hear what's going on. So they know if their guy's getting money and going to pull one over on them. But the reason I've heard the stories is because we'll get into this, but we visit the shelters to do proactive education for our homeless shelters. And you wouldn't believe how many times when I say who's cashed a check for one of these groups. And if there's 150 people in the shelter, 50 to 75 will raise their hands and they'll all say, we've been to jail for it. And I'll ask them, has anybody ever been hurt doing this? And a majority of them have been manhandled, abused, tossed out of moving cars, stripped down because they were actually trying to steal an extra 20 out of the stack of money they got, and they'll be stripped of their clothes and thrown out. So yeah, these are gangbangers that are prone to violence, so they're not going to just quit being violent when they're dealing with this as well.
Yeah, it's like there's no honor among thieves, and it doesn't surprise me that, you know, at the back end they might just steal the money that they let them keep, you know, and like you said, toss them out. And it's sad. It's sad that people that are down on their luck, you know, homeless, or maybe they have some addiction problems, that these criminals are taking advantage of them.
Yep.
Hey, Shane, that's outstanding that you go to these homeless shelters and you talk to the people there. But how would law enforcement, you just mentioned before that you know, they might have a second car out there doing surveillance. Do you talk to law enforcement about, you know, approaching the financial institution when you get a call that somebody's in there cashing a check to kind of know your surroundings before you pull up?
Yeah. And what we did when we started what's called the Operation Homeless Fraud Prevention Program, when we started that in 2017 here in Lexington, the first thing we did was educate law enforcement. Now, the financial crimes guys, they knew all about Operation Homeless and are experts at it. but the day shift patrolmen don't know anything about it. So we got our, we did like roll call training and said, this is what we're going to do. We're going to generate some calls. And when you all respond, this is what you're going to be looking at and looking for. And if you want me to, I'll go on and start talking about how the whole program and how it works to kind of explain what I'm talking about.
Absolutely.
All right. So when we started it, one, banks are always playing catch up, you know, chasing their tail because, say, my bank, one of my branches locally calls and says, hey, I think I just had a homeless guy in here. He tried to cash his check. We didn't like it, and he grabbed it and ran out. And he ran to a car, you know, that we couldn't see, but he ran off pretty far away. Well, then we start putting out notices to all our branches internally through email, and we send pictures. And then sure enough, the next branch down the road, the guy shows up. Well, it's too late. He's already probably cashed 10 checks at other institutions, and we're playing complete catch up. So what we did is we called our shelter directors. We have two big shelters that are 24-hour shelters, and then two or three day centers that are just for lunch, maybe dinner, and breakfast, and just bad weather shelters. We got them all on board, told them what we wanted to do, and they said, yeah, y'all come anytime you want. We love having people. I said, matter of fact, we'll throw a pizza party or an ice cream social, which we said, we'll pay for the ice cream, we'll pay for the pizza. It's not a big deal. So we did that at all of our shelters. We had a captive audience at all of them. The homeless all bought into it, which I will say it is barely organized chaos doing this presentation, because you're dealing with an audience full of people who know more about it than you do and are all wanting to tell their stories about their arrest and their recruitment and their money they lost and, you know, the time they spent in jail for it. So it's a hectic presentation because you have a very active audience, very engaged audience. So we would do that, and I made business cards and posters. And those business cards were passed out to everybody at every shelter, and posters were hung on every wall. And picture a poster that says, stay out of jail. And on that poster is pictures of $100 bills to draw their attention in. And the poster says, if someone offers you money to cash checks, don't do it. It's a scam. You'll go to jail. Walk away. Call us. Earn the reward. And what we tell them at our shelter visits, whatever they offer to pay you, we will pay you more to not do it. And usually they're paid 50 to 100. We'll give them 150, 200 to call us. And we have my cell phone number, one of my other bank investigators' phone numbers. We actually had two financial crimes detectives' phone numbers on there, but we took them off because they're not going to call the police. The police are sometimes the bad guy to that audience. But they'll call us, and they called us after our first visits within weeks. They were calling us left and right. We were getting entire groups out of Atlanta arrested, because I'm sure your shelters and your areas, is like they are in my areas, they have cameras. They have engaged directors. So the directors, I would call them as soon as somebody homeless would call me. I'd say, hey, can you pull up your cameras, take your cell phone, text me a picture of the car that's recruiting people right now. And then the homeless guys with their cell phones are sending us pictures. And then I'm in turn sending those pictures to the detectives and all the patrolmen on duty, and they were getting caught so quick they didn't know what hit them. I mean, and when I say we had success, after the first two or three years of this, they finally figured out what we were doing. And I think some of the homeless were telling them, hey, what are you going to pay me? Because the bank's going to pay me $200 and you're only going to give me 50. So they started figuring it out. But now it's been 2 years since we've had a visit to any shelter in Central Kentucky. They bring the homeless in from Tennessee, West Virginia, Ohio, Florida, Georgia, but they don't bring any of our people in. Our homeless people don't even get recruited anymore. So we've disrupted their behavior. It still happens, but we've greatly disrupted it.
Yeah. And they probably know twice to hit your bank because everybody kept getting arrested. So,
we partnered with all banks and credit unions. So when they would actually call me and my guy, because we were both retired law enforcement and everybody else in our line of work was not. And they didn't want, they didn't want a homeless guy calling them, on their cell phones, which that's the way it's got to be. You can't be a desk phone because you may not be at your desk. But I didn't care what bank they were calling, whose check it was. We would just put out the red alerts through our network and then send out everything to the police, and we all won because nobody got a check cashed that day.
Right. So, Shane, obviously the IFCI is an apolitical organization here, but there obviously has been a big increase of immigrants coming into the United States, whether legally or illegally. But is this giving these criminal organizations more targets to choose from? And, you know, I could tell you from talking to law enforcement and financial institutions, they're encountering a lot of people that have just crossed the border into the United States, and within weeks or days, they're being arrested for financial crimes.
Yes, and we're seeing that because that target audience is probably, if you can speak Spanish or if they speak English, it might be easier to recruit than the homeless and easier to work with. So we're already seeing payroll checks stolen and counterfeited, and they're going out here using the people who've crossed over the borders recently that are looking for paydays, looking for work, and they may not know they're committing crimes, or they may have come over here with a criminal organization just for that purpose. But yes, that is picking up, and it's picking up very fast. We're seeing it in this region now.
Hey, Shane, thinking about Operation Homeless, there's kind of a part two to this scam, right, to this fraud that's going on, is where they're being recruited to go into cell phone retail stores to purchase cell phones. Is that correct?
That's correct. That's been occurring for years. That's actually how I found out about Operation Homeless during my law enforcement career. We started getting a lot of cell phone cases and found out that's what they were using the homeless for, was if they had an ID, they could do the same thing they do with checks, but they just enroll the person to go get a cell phone. And if you walk into one of your major carrier phone companies, you're going to walk out with a new iPhone 15 or whatever the newest phone is, and you're probably going to owe $1,200, $1,500, whatever the going rate is. But if you sign up for friends and family and you get your whole crew signed up, you might walk out with three or four phones for nothing more than a $50 deposit per each phone.
Right.
And then those phones on the black market are worth thousands of dollars.
Yeah, right. You come in with a minimum deposit, or you set up a payment plan for 2 years at whatever, $50 a month, but knowing that they're never going to pay it. But you know, it's big time.
So the phones a lot of times shipped out of state and then back to China, where it's worth even more money. And the worst case scenario for the homeless guy is now he might have had good credit, but no longer. He just ruined his credit.
Yeah, and it's very, you know, a lot of the businesses are just chalking that off as, you know, loss or unable to pay, when they're really specifically being targeted by criminal groups.
Correct.
So, Shane, you know, I cringe anytime I say mail theft. Mike gets mad at me, but but you do some work in the community, right, as well with businesses and helping them prevent some of these crimes from happening. Can you explain what you do?
Well, we, and it's fueled by check fraud, because check fraud, just for every bank I've ever talked to, the last 2 years have just been killing the fraud losses at banks. I mean, it's big. And we got hit with it so hard, then we realized that a lot of it was mail theft. The arrow key was unaccounted for way too long by the Postal Service. So, and then the robbery of the Postal Service guys at the same time. But the lack of security of our mail just made it too easy. So we started getting with our businesses, because one, they're aggravated. We're making them either get positive pay or change their account. It's a nuisance to them. So we started doing lunch and learns proactively and inviting some of our, we just identified who's our biggest check writers, who writes the biggest checks, the most checks, and the most vulnerable that's putting them in the mail. And we invite them down to our main office. We order pizza or whatever they want to eat. And we have a production we've put together just showing them, one, don't put your check in the mail. If you do, there's a better way to do it. Walk it into the post office or the post office station, or get on a product that doesn't require you to use checks. Get on corporate cards or ACH wires, any of the other products banks have. So we do the proactive business education as well, and that goes over well. We've never had anybody not buy in after they've seen the presentation. They actually leave with their jaws dropped at how much of a problem check fraud is.
Yeah, Shane, I'm hearing what you're saying. You know, the U.S. Postal Inspection Service and Beck as an analyst helping out. I mean, the Inspection Service has got a lot of great cases going now. Yeah, the arrow key could be a problem, but, you know, it's a federal violation to be in possession of one, up to 10 years in federal prison, whether it's a regular arrow key or it's a counterfeit key. It's a federal violation. And we're prosecuting people for that, you know, and they're going to jail. As far as checks, you know, it's still a lot of mail. I mean, like I said, here in Chicago, the main thing is they're going into the banks, just withdrawing funds without even cashing a check. We're seeing a lot of that. And I don't know if you're seeing it too, Shane. A lot of these checks that are stolen out of the mail are altered and made payable to somebody who got recruited on social media to either give up their debit card and PIN number or allow a check to be deposited to their account. And I bring that up all the time. And, you know, these are collusive, legitimate account holders that need to be identified and prosecuted. And I wonder, do you have a program when you identify somebody, you know, putting checks into their account at your institution, what you do?
Yeah, we interview them. If we identify they're complicit in it, we file reports and seek charges against them. We're not hesitant to prosecute our own customers.
So, Shane, I want to thank you for coming on. I could probably talk to Mike, and I could talk to you probably for a couple more hours. But, you know, I really appreciate you sharing this knowledge with our audience and listeners. And like I said, what an incredible law enforcement career. And it looks like you haven't slowed down a bit. And what I love is the effort that you put into preventing crime from happening. So thank you for what you do. And we'll have to try and get you back on another episode.
Sure. And thanks for having me and letting me talk about it.
All right, Shane and Mike, hey, you know, before we go, we urge our listeners to visit lifevibe.biz. Whether it's your health, your family's safety, or making a positive impact in the world, lifevibe.biz has you covered. Thank you, lifevibe.biz, for supporting the Protectors podcast and for everything that you do for the American family.
You're right, Mark, and I want to thank the audience for being a participant in our podcast, coming on, listening to us. We really appreciate it, so thank you so much.
Absolutely, Mike, and you know what? Spread the word. That's what we want you to go out, tell people about this podcast, because it's protecting people, it's getting victims to come forward. And Mike, where can people tune into our podcast, The Protectors?
I like Spotify, but there's other ways you can listen to the podcast. You go to Apple Podcasts, Stitcher. Wherever you listen to podcasts, you could sign up.
And we're there.
You're there. Exactly.
That's right. You could find us. And Mike, you know what? We want to hear from our listeners too. So if they have a topic that they want to hear on the podcast, shoot us an email. If you're a former victim of a crime, or maybe you're in the middle of a fraud scheme right now, give us a shout out to our email. It's IAFCI, Protectors Podcast, @gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you and also get feedback and see how much you're enjoying our podcast.
Hey, Mark, before we go, you know, we have our international conference this year. It's going to be held in Henderson, Nevada, last week of August. What a great conference. We usually get around 900 attendees or more. And Shane, we want to throw you an invite. Such a great presentation today coming on as a guest. We'd love to have you come out to our conference. What do you think?
Yeah, I'd love to. Let's do it.
All right.
And
awesome.
If you don't mind me, a shameless plug for our upcoming Fraud Academy that we host for all banks and credit unions in the state of Kentucky. But we've opened it up this year nationwide to all banking associations. So check your banking association for August 6th, 7th, and 8th National Fraud Academy, where we do teach Operation Homeless and a bunch of other organized crime that involves financial institutions. And it is for banks and credit unions only.
Awesome. And Shane, I got to mention one more thing. You know, homeless is such a problem here in the country. And this is just one more, this scam that's going on with these gangbangers that are doing this to the homeless. You know, you're doing something to help the homeless. You're trying to have them avoid being caught up in this scam. And like I said, there's just so many other problems. You know, it's just the homeless itself is just a problem nationwide. And we appreciate what you're doing trying to help them.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Absolutely. And guys, you know what? Before I go, got to give one more shout out to our sponsor, lifevibe.biz. If you're one of our listeners, go check them out on the website. They have some great products. And again, I want to thank our listeners. And Mike, you know what? It's time for us all to sign off. So I am Mark Solomon, International President of the IFCI, and I'm signing off from Connecticut.
And I'm Shane Ensminger, signing off from Lexington, Kentucky.
And this is Mike Carroll from Chicago. We'll see you again.
Thanks for listening to today's podcast. Remember, as you join the fight to protect our citizens, you're not alone. With more than 6,500 members from around the world, the men and women of the IAFCI are standing together with you. To learn more or to join the IAFCI, please visit our website at www.iafci.org. The Protectors Podcast is produced by Modified Media and is available for free wherever you listen to podcasts. The hosts and guests' opinions are their own and do not reflect those of management, employers, or sponsors. Listeners are encouraged to contact law enforcement if they suspect being a victim of a crime.